4. And how is the Arahant one who has no bolt? Here the monk has abandoned the 5 lower fetters, has cut them off at the root, so that they are no longer subject to future arising. That is how he is one who has no bolt. 35. And how is the Arahant a noble one whose banner is lowered, whose burden is lowered, who is unfettered? Here the Arahant has abandoned the conceit, I am, has cut it off at the root, so that it is no longer subject to future arising. That is how he is a noble one whose banner is lowered, whose burden is lowered, who is unfettered. From Majjhima Nikaya 22. Alagadupamma Sutta 1, 139 through 140. Verse 4. 9 things an Arahant cannot do. In the past, and also now, I declare that a monk who is an Arahant with taints destroyed, one who has lived the spiritual life, done his task, laid down the burden, attained his own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, and become liberated by final knowledge, is incapable of transgression in regard to 9 things. He is incapable of destroying life, of taking what is not given, of engaging in the sexual act, of telling a deliberate lie, and of making use of stored up enjoyments as he did in the past when he was a householder. Further, he is incapable of taking a wrong course of action on account of desire, on account of hatred, on account of delusion, or on account of fear. In the past and also now, I declare that a monk who is an Arahant is incapable of transgression in regard to these 9 things. From Anguttara Nikaya 9.7 4. 370 through 371. Verse 5. A mind unshaken. The Venerable Sariputta said, "When, friend, a monk is thus liberated in mind, even if powerful forms cognizable by the eye come into range of his eye, they do not obsess his mind. His mind remains uncontaminated, steady, attained to imperturbability, and he contemplates their fall. Even if powerful sounds cognizable by the ear, smells cognizable by the nose, flavors cognizable by the tongue, tactile objects cognizable by the body, mental phenomena cognizable by the mind come into range of his mind, they do not obsess his mind. His mind remains uncontaminated, steady, attained to imperturbability, and he contemplates their fall. Suppose, friend, there were a stone pillar 16 meters long, 8 meters sunk in the ground, and 8 meters above the ground. Then a powerful rainstorm would come from the east. The pillar would not budge, would not shake, would not tremble. Then a powerful rainstorm would come from the north, from the west, from the south. The pillar would not budge, would not shake, would not tremble. Why not? Because of the depth of the base, and because the stone pillar has been deeply planted. So too, for a monk thus liberated in mind, if powerful sense objects come into range, they do not obsess his mind. His mind remains uncontaminated, steady, attained to imperturbability, and he contemplates their fall. From Anguttara Nikaya 9.26, 4, 404 through 405. Verse 6. The 10 powers of an Arahant monk. The Buddha asked the Venerable Sariputta, "How many powers does an Arahant monk have, Sariputta, possessing which he claims that he has attained the destruction of the taints?" "The Arahant monk has 10 powers, Venerable Sir, possessing which he claims that he has attained the destruction of the taints." "What 10? "Here, Venerable Sir, for an Arahant monk all formations have been well seen as they really are with correct wisdom as impermanent. This is a power of an Arahant monk on the basis of which he claims that he has attained the destruction of the taints." "Again, Venerable Sir, for an Arahant monk sensual pleasures have been well seen as they really are with correct wisdom, as similar to a charcoal pit. This too is a power of an Arahant monk." Again, venerable sir, the mind of an Arahant monk slants, slopes, and inclines to seclusion. It dwells in seclusion, delights in renunciation, and is entirely finished with all things that are a basis for the taints. This too is a power of an Arahant monk. Further, venerable sir, for an Arahant monk, the four establishments of mindfulness have been developed to the point that they are well developed. This too is a power of an Arahant monk. Further, venerable sir, for an Arahant monk, the four right kinds of striving, the four bases for spiritual power, the five spiritual faculties, the five powers, the seven factors of enlightenment, the Noble Eightfold Path has been developed to the point that it is well developed. This too is a power of an Arahant monk on the basis of which he claims that he has attained the destruction of the taints. Anguttara Nikaya, 10.90 5. 174 through 175. Verse 7. The Sage at Peace. 20. The Buddha further addressed Pukkusati thus, "Then, after contemplating the six elements, there remains only equanimity, purified and bright, malleable, wieldy and radiant." 21. He understands thus, "If I were to direct this equanimity, so purified and bright, to the base of the infinity of space and to develop my mind accordingly, then this equanimity of mine, supported by this base, clinging to it, would remain for a very long time. If I were to direct this equanimity, so purified and bright, to the base of the infinity of consciousness, to the base of nothingness, to the base of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop my mind accordingly, then this equanimity of mine, supported by this base, clinging to it, would remain for a very long time." 22. He understands thus, "If I were to direct this equanimity, so purified and bright, to the base of the infinity of space, and to develop my mind accordingly, this would be conditioned. If I were to direct this equanimity, so purified and bright, to the base of the infinity of consciousness, to the base of nothingness, to the base of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop my mind accordingly, this would be conditioned." He does not construct or generate any volition tending toward their existence or non-existence. Since he does not construct or generate any volition tending toward either existence or non-existence, he does not cling to anything in this world. Not clinging, he is not agitated. Not being agitated, he personally attains Nibbana. He understands, birth is destroyed. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. 23. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he understands, it is impermanent. There is no holding to it. There is no delight in it. If he feels a painful feeling, he understands, it is impermanent. There is no holding to it. There is no delight in it. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, it is impermanent. There is no holding to it. There is no delight in it. 24. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. He feels a painful feeling, he feels it detached. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. When he feels a feeling terminating with the body, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with the body. When he feels a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. He understands, on the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. Monk, just as an oil lamp burns in dependence on oil and a wick, and when the oil and wick are used up, if it does not get any more fuel, it is extinguished from lack of fuel. So too when he feels a feeling terminating with the body, a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. He understands, on the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. 25. Therefore, a monk possessing this wisdom possesses the supreme foundation of wisdom. For this, monk, is the supreme noble wisdom, namely the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. 26. His liberation, being founded upon truth, is unshakable, for that is false, monk, which has a deceptive nature, and that is true, which has an undeceptive nature, nibbana. Therefore, a monk possessing this truth possesses the supreme foundation of truth. For this, monk, is the supreme noble truth, namely, nibbana, which has an undeceptive nature. 27. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he undertook and accepted acquisitions. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Therefore, a monk possessing this relinquishment possesses the supreme foundation of relinquishment. For this monk is the supreme noble relinquishment, namely, the relinquishment of all acquisitions. 28. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced covetousness, desire, and lust. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced anger, ill will, and hate. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced ignorance and delusion. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Therefore, a monk possessing this peace possesses the supreme foundation of peace. For this monk is the supreme noble peace, namely the pacification of lust, hate, and delusion. 29. So it was with reference to this that it was said, one should not neglect wisdom, should preserve truth, should cultivate relinquishment, and should train for peace. 30. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these foundations, and when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him, he is called a sage at peace. So it was said, and with reference to what was this said? 31. Monk, I am is a conceiving. I am this is a conceiving. I shall be is a conceiving. I shall not be is a conceiving. I shall have a physical form is a conceiving. I shall be formless is a conceiving. I shall be percipient is a conceiving. I shall be non-percipient is a conceiving. I shall be neither percipient nor non-percipient is a conceiving. Conceiving is a disease. Conceiving is a tumor. Conceiving is a dart. By overcoming all conceivings, monk, one is called a sage at peace, and the sage at peace is not born, does not age, does not die. He is not shaken and does not yearn, for there is nothing present in him by which he might be born. Not being born, how could he age? Not aging, how could he die? Not dying, how could he be shaken? Not being shaken, why should he yearn? 32. So it was with reference to this that it was said, the tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these foundations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him, he is called a sage at peace. From Majjhima Nikaya 140. Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta 3, 244 through 247. Verse 8. Happy indeed are the arahants. Happy indeed are the arahants. No craving can be found in them. Cut off is the conceit I am. Burst asunder is delusion's net. They have reached the unstirred state. Limpid are their minds. They are unsullied in the world. The holy ones, without taints. Having fully understood the five aggregates, ranging in the seven good qualities, those praiseworthy superior persons are the Buddha's bosom offspring. Endowed with the seven gems, trained in the threefold training, those great heroes wander about, with fear and trembling abandoned. endowed with the 10 factors, those great Nagas, concentrated, are the best beings in the world. No craving can be found in them. The adept's knowledge has arisen in them. This body is the last I bear. In regard to the core of the spiritual life, they no longer depend on others. They do not waver in discrimination. They are released from renewed existence, having reached the stage of the tamed. They are the victors in the world. Above, across, and below, delight is no more found in them. They boldly sound their lion's roar. The enlightened are supreme in the world. From Samyutta Nikaya, 22:76. 3:83-84. Part 5. The Tathagata. Verse 1. The Buddha and the Arahant. Monks, through disenchantment with form, feeling, perception, volitional formations and consciousness, through their fading away and cessation, the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, is liberated by non-clinging. He is called a perfectly enlightened one. Through disenchantment with form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, through their fading away and cessation, a monk liberated by wisdom is liberated by non-clinging. He is called one liberated by wisdom. Therein, monks, what is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, and a monk liberated by wisdom? Venerable sir, our teachings are rooted in the Blessed One, guided by the Blessed One, take recourse in the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One would clear up the meaning of this statement. Having heard it from him, the monks will remember it. Then listen and attend closely, monks. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir, the monks replied. The Blessed One said this. The Tathagata, monks, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, is the originator of the path unarisen before, the producer of the path unproduced before, the declarer of the path undeclared before. He is the knower of the path, the discoverer of the path, the one skilled in the path, and his disciples now dwell following that path and become possessed of it afterward. This, monks, is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, and a monk liberated by wisdom. Samyutta Nikaya, 22:58, 3:65-66. Verse 2. For the welfare of many. Monks, these three persons arise in the world for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of devas and humans. What three? Here, monks, a Tathagata arises in the world, an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. He teaches the Dhamma that is good at the beginning, good in the middle, good at the end. With the right meaning and phrasing, he reveals the spiritual life that is utterly perfect and pure. This, monks, is the first person that arises in the world for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare and happiness of devas and humans. Then, monks, a disciple of that teacher is an Arahant with taints destroyed, as in text 10:1-3, stanza 42. Completely liberated through final knowledge. He teaches the Dhamma that is good at the beginning. He reveals the spiritual life that is utterly perfect and pure. This, monks, is the second person that arises in the world for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of devas and humans. Then, monks, a disciple of that teacher is a trainee practicing the path, learned and endowed with precepts and observances. He too teaches the Dhamma that is good at the beginning. He reveals the spiritual life that is utterly perfect and pure. This, monks, is the third person that arises in the world for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of devas and humans. These, monks, are the three persons that arise in the world for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of devas and humans. Iti Vutaka 84, 78 through 79. Verse 3, Sariputta's lofty utterance. The Venerable Sariputta approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said, Venerable Sir, I have such confidence in the Blessed One that I believe there has not been, nor ever will be, nor exists at present another ascetic or Brahmin more knowledgeable than the Blessed One with respect to enlightenment. Lofty indeed is this bellowing utterance of yours, Sariputta. You have roared a definitive lion's roar. Have you now, Sariputta, encompassed with your mind the minds of all the arahants, the perfectly enlightened ones, arisen in the past, and known thus, those blessed ones were of such moral discipline, or of such qualities, or of such wisdom, or of such meditative dwellings, or of such liberation? No, Venerable Sir. Then, Sariputta, have you encompassed with your mind the minds of all the arahants, the perfectly enlightened ones who still arise in the future, and known thus, those blessed ones will be of such moral discipline, or of such qualities, or of such wisdom, or of such meditative dwellings, or of such liberation? No, Venerable Sir. Then, Sariputta, have you encompassed with your mind my own mind, I being at present the arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, and known thus, the blessed one is of such moral discipline, or of such qualities, or of such wisdom, or of such meditative dwellings, or of such liberation? No, Venerable Sir. Sariputta, when you do not have any knowledge encompassing the minds of the arahants, the perfectly enlightened ones of the past, the future, and the present, why do you utter this lofty, bellowing utterance and roar this definitive lion's roar? Venerable Sir, I have such confidence in the Blessed One that I believe there has not been, nor ever will be, nor exists at present another ascetic or Brahmin more knowledgeable than the Blessed One with respect to enlightenment. I do not have, Venerable Sir, any knowledge encompassing the minds of the arahants, the perfectly enlightened ones of the past, the future, and the present. But still I have understood this by inference from the Dhamma. Suppose, Venerable Sir, a king had a frontier city with strong ramparts, walls, and arches, and a single gate. The gatekeeper posted there would be wise, competent, and intelligent, one who keeps out strangers and admits acquaintances. While he is walking along the path that encircles the city, he would not see a cleft or an opening in the walls even big enough for a cat to slip through. He might think, whatever large creatures enter or leave this city, all enter and leave through this one gate. So too, Venerable Sir, I have understood this by inference from the Dhamma. Whatever arahants, perfectly enlightened ones, arose in the past, all those blessed ones had first abandoned the five hindrances, defilements of the mind that weaken wisdom, and then, with their minds well established in the four establishments of mindfulness, developed correctly the seven factors of enlightenment. And thereby they had awakened to the unsurpassed, perfect enlightenment. And, Venerable Sir, whatever arahants, perfectly enlightened ones, will arise in the future, all those blessed ones will first abandon the five hindrances, defilements of the mind that weaken wisdom, and then, with their minds well established in the four defilements of mindfulness, will develop correctly the seven factors of enlightenment, and thereby they will awaken to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment, and, Venerable Sir, the Blessed One at present, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, first abandoned the five hindrances, defilements of the mind that weaken wisdom, and then, with his mind well established in the four establishments of mindfulness, developed correctly the seven factors of enlightenment, and thereby he has awakened to the unsurpassed, perfect enlightenment. Good, good, Sariputta. Therefore, Sariputta, you should repeat this Dhamma exposition frequently to the monks and the nuns, to the male lay followers and the female lay followers. Even though some foolish people may have perplexity or uncertainty regarding the Tathagata, When they hear this Dhamma exposition, their perplexity or uncertainty will be abandoned. Samyutta Nikaya 47:12-5, 159-161. Verse 4. The powers and grounds of self-confidence. 9. Sariputta, the Tathagata has these 10 Tathagata's powers, possessing which he claims the place of the chief of the herd, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. What are the 10? 10. 1. Here the Tathagata correctly understands the possible as possible, and the impossible as impossible. And that is a Tathagata's power that the Tathagata has by virtue of which he claims the place of the chief of the herd. Roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. 11. 2. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands the results of actions undertaken, past, future, and present, by way of possibilities and causes. That, too, is the Tathagata's power. 12.3. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands the ways leading everywhere. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 13.4. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands the world with its many and different elements. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 14.5. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands how beings have different inclinations. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 15.6. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands the disposition of the faculties of other beings, other persons. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 16.7. Again, the Tathagata correctly understands the defilement, the cleansing, and the emergence in regard to the jhanas, liberations, concentrations, and attainments. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 17.8. Again, the Tathagata recollects his manifold past lives with their aspects and particulars. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 18.9. Again, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, the Tathagata sees beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. And he understands how beings pass on according to their actions. That, too, is a Tathagata's power. 19.10. Again, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, the Tathagata in this present life enters upon and dwells in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. That, too, is a Tathagata's power that the Tathagata has, by virtue of which he claims the place of the leader of the herd, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. 20. The Tathagata has these 10 Tathagata's powers, possessing which he claims the place of the herd, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. 22. Sariputta. The Tathagata has these 4 grounds of self-confidence, possessing which he claims the place of the leader of the herd, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. What are the 4? 23. Here, I see no ground on which any ascetic or Brahmin or Deva or Mara or Brahma or anyone else at all in the world could, in accordance with the Dhamma, accuse me thus. While you claim to be perfectly enlightened, you are not perfectly enlightened about these things. And seeing no ground for that, I dwell in safety, fearlessness, and self-confidence. 24. I see no ground on which any ascetic, or anyone at all, could accuse me thus. While you claim to be one who has destroyed the taints, you have not destroyed these taints. And seeing no ground for that, I dwell in safety, fearlessness, and self-confidence. 25. I see no ground on which any ascetic or anyone at all could accuse me thus. Those things called obstructions by you are not able to obstruct one who engages in them. and seeing no ground for that, I dwell in safety, fearlessness, and self-confidence. 26. I see no ground on which any ascetic, or anyone at all, could accuse me thus. When you teach the Dhamma to someone, it does not lead him, when he practices it, to the complete destruction of suffering. And seeing no ground for that, I dwell in safety, fearlessness, and self-confidence. 27. A Tathagata has these four kinds of self-confidence, possessing in which he claims the place of the leader of the herd, roaring his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. From Majjhima Nikaya 12, Mahasihanada Sutta 1, 70 through 72. Verse 5. The Manifestation of Great Light. Monks, so long as the sun and moon have not arisen in the world, for just so long there is no manifestation of great light and radiance, but then blinding darkness prevails, a dense mass of darkness. For just so long day and night are not discerned, the month and fortnight are not discerned, the seasons and the year are not discerned. But monks, when the sun and moon arise in the world, when there is the manifestation of great light and radiance, then there is no blinding darkness, no dense mass of darkness, then day and night are discerned, the months and fortnight are discerned, the seasons and year are discerned. So too, monks, so long as a Tathagata has not arisen in the world, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, for just so long there is no manifestation of great light and radiance. But then blinding darkness prevails, a dense mass of darkness. For just so long there is no explaining, teaching, proclaiming, establishing, disclosing, analyzing, or elucidating of the Four Noble Truths. But, monks, when a Tathagata arises in the world, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, then there is the manifestation of great light and radiance. Then no blinding darkness prevails, no dense mass of darkness. Then there is the explaining, teaching, proclaiming, establishing, disclosing, analyzing, and elucidating of the Four Noble Truths. Samyutta Nikaya 56-38 5 442-443 Verse 6. The Man Desiring Our Good. 25. Suppose, monks, that in a wooded range there were a great low-lying marsh, near which a large herd of deer lived. Then a man appeared desiring their ruin, harm, and bondage, and he closed off the safe and good path to be traveled joyfully, and he opened up a false path, and he put out a decoy, and set up a dummy so that the large herd of deer might later come upon calamity, disaster, and loss. But another man came desiring their good, welfare, and protection, and he reopened the safe and good path to be traveled joyfully, and he closed off the false path, and he removed the decoy and destroyed the dummy, so that the large herd of deer might later come to growth, increase, and fulfillment. 26. Monks, I have given this simile in order to convey a meaning. This is the meaning. The great low-lying marsh is a term for sensual pleasures. The large herd of deer is a term for beings. The man desiring their ruin, harm, and bondage is a term for Mara the evil one. The false path is a term for the wrong eightfold path. That is, wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. The decoy is a term for delight and lust. The dummy is a term for ignorance. The man desiring their good, welfare, and protection is a term for the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. The safe and good path to be traveled joyfully is a term for the Noble Eightfold Path, that is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So, monks, the safe and good path to be traveled joyfully has been reopened by me. The wrong path has been closed off, the decoy removed, the dummy destroyed. From Majjhima Nikaya 19. Vedha Vitakka Sutta. 1. 117 through 118. Verse 7. The Lion. Monks, in the evening the lion, the king of beasts, comes out from his lair. He then stretches himself, surveys the four quarters all around, and roars his lion's roar 3 times, after which he sets out in search of game. When the lion, the king of beasts, roars its lion's roar, most of the animals that hear the sound are filled with fear, a sense of urgency and terror. Those who live in holes enter their holes. Those who live in the water enter the water. Those who live in the woods enter the woods, and the birds fly up into the air. Even those royal bull elephants, bound by strong thongs in the villages, towns, and capital cities, burst and break their bonds asunder. Frightened, they urinate and defecate and flee here and there. So powerful among the animals, monks, is the lion, the king of beasts, so majestic and mighty. So too, monks, when the Tathagata arises in the world, an arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one, he teaches the Dhamma thus, such its form, such its origin, such its passing away, such is feeling, such is perception, such are volitional formations, such is consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. Then, monks, when those devas who are long-lived, beautiful, abounding in happiness, dwelling for a long time in lofty places, hear the Tathagata's teaching of the Dhamma, most are filled with fear, a sense of urgency and terror, saying, it seems, though we thought ourselves permanent, that we are impermanent. It seems, though we thought ourselves stable, that we are unstable. It seems, though we thought ourselves eternal, that we are transient. It seems, sir, that we are impermanent, unstable, transient, included within identity. So, powerful monks, is the Tathagata over this world, together with its devas, so majestic and mighty. Samyutta Nikaya 22:78, 3, 84 through 85. Verse 8. Why is he called the Tathagata? The world, monks, has been fully awakened to by the Tathagata. The Tathagata is detached from the world. The origin of the world has been fully awakened to by the Tathagata. The Tathagata has abandoned the origin of the world. The cessation of the world has been fully awakened to by the Tathagata. The Tathagata has realized the cessation of the world. The way to the cessation of the world has been fully awakened to by the Tathagata. The Tathagata has developed the way to the cessation of the world. In the world, monks, with its devas, with Mara, with Brahma, in this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, with its devas and humans, whatever there is that is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, reached, sought after, examined by the mind, all that has been awakened to by the Tathagata. Therefore he is called the Tathagata. From the night he fully awakened, monks, until the night he attains final Nibbana, in this interval whatever he speaks, talks of, and expounds, all that is just so, not otherwise. Therefore he is called the Tathagata. As he speaks, monks, so he does. As he does, so he speaks. Since he does as he speaks and speaks as he does, therefore he is called the Tathagata. In this world, monks, with its devas, with Mara, with Brahma, in this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, with its devas and humans, the Tathagata is the vanquisher, the unvanquished, the universal seer, the wielder of mastery. Therefore he is called the Tathagata. Having directly known all the world, all in the world exactly as it is, he is detached from all the world, unengaged with all the world. He indeed is the all-vanquishing sage, the one released from all the knots, who has reached the supreme state of peace, Nibbana, without fear from any side. He is the Buddha, with taints destroyed, untroubled with all doubts cut off, who has attained the destruction of all kama, liberated in the extinction of acquisitions. He is the Blessed One, the Buddha. He is the lion unsurpassed. In this world, together with its devas, he set in motion the wheel of Brahma. Thus, those devas and human beings who have gone for refuge to the Buddha, having assembled, pay homage to him, the Great One free from diffidence. Tamed, he is supreme among those who tame. At peace, he is the sage among those who bring peace. Freed, he is the chief of those who set free. Delivered, he is the best of those who deliver. Thus indeed they pay homage to him, the Great One, free from diffidence. In this world, together with its devas, there is no one who can rival you. Anguttara Nikaya 4:23, 2, 23 through 24. Itivutaka 112, 121 through 123.
This has been an Audible Studios production of In the Buddha's Words, an anthology of discourses from the Pali Canon. Edited and introduced by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Foreword by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Performed by Fager Al-Casey. Executive Producer Susie Bright. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2005 by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.